Blog Talk Radio.
95% of success is just showing up.
Listening to international investment advisor Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt Show. www.goldsteinongelt.com.
Welcome to the Goldstein on Gelt Show. Hi, I'm Doug Goldstein, your host. I have to tell you, because sometimes guests ask, what is the word gelt? For those of you overseas and not Yiddish speakers, gelt is the Yiddish word for money. So welcome to the Goldstein on Gelt Show. But the show is not only about money. We talk about lots and lots of ideas. And actually, today I'm pretty excited because this week has been a great week for my co-author, Susan Polgar, and I, and our book, Rich as a King. We are appearing at the Ira Sohn Conference. The Ira Sohn Conference is a fantastic conference. The main concept of this financial conference is to raise money for research into pediatric cancer. The conference has been meeting for 20 years. It has gotten so big because they bring the world's best speakers. The conference is so huge, it now takes place at Lincoln Center. Thousands and thousands of people come. For those of the people coming this year, the 20th anniversary of the Ira Sohn Foundation Conference, they're getting a free copy of the hardcover edition of Rich as a King. The idea, I hope, being that not only will these people be strategic investors, but they will be strategic givers as well. Not only that, but at the conference, Susan is playing a simultaneous game of chess, probably against 10 people, 12 people. It's all very, very exciting. It's all to help charity, to study and research, and to hopefully cure one day very, very soon pediatric cancer. There's a lot of other exciting things going on, not the least of which is to tell you about my awesome guests for today, but you'll have to hang on just one second for that.
The Goldstein on Gelt Show is sponsored by Profile Investment Services, which helps folks around the world with stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and other investments in U.S. brokerage and IRA accounts. Get in touch with Profile if you'd like help with your portfolio at www.profile-financial.com.
Now let's hear from CPA Ron Zalbin with a tax tip on the Goldstein on Gelt Show.
Hi, I'm Ron Zalbin, a U.S. and Israeli CPA with the firm of Abu Lafia, Avital, and Sharansky with offices in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. In today's segment, I'd like to share with you some breaking news regarding Social Security benefit payments. If you receive Social Security from the United States government and those Social Security benefits were reduced because you also received Israeli Social Security, Bituach Lumi, old age benefit, because of the WEP, which is known as the Windfall Elimination Provision, you will be able to recover the reduced benefits from September 3rd of 2004. The reason for this is there was a class action lawsuit known as Greenberg versus Colvin, in which the plaintiffs succeeded in proving that the payment of old age benefits was based on residency. On April 8th, 2015, the United States District Court for the District of Columbia preliminary approved the class action lawsuit agreement. The court has another hearing scheduled for June 30th of 2015 in order to help the court to make a final decision about approving or disapproving the settlement agreement. If this situation applies to you, you should go to the Social Security website, ssa.gov/Greenberg, that's Greenberg, and there is lots of helpful information along with forms you can fill out in order to recover your reduced benefits. One thing I want to emphasize is if you had your Social Security reduced because you received a foreign pension, like an Israeli pension, this class action lawsuit does not apply to your situation. It only applies to the situation of those who are receiving old age benefits from the Israeli Social Security Administration. For those who have had their benefits reduced because of an Israeli pension, the WEP continues to apply. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to email me at ron@abulafia.co.il.
Thanks so much, CPA Ron Zalbin, for today's Goldstein on Gelt Tax Tip.
Excuse me, can you please tell me where you are right now? I mean, I know that you're listening to Doug Goldstein's financial planning show, but now that Goldstein on Gelt is syndicated around the world, you might be listening anywhere from the Far East all the way to the west coast of California. Tell me, do you listen to the show live Monday nights at 7 p.m. Israel time? Or do you download the podcast at the radio show tab of www.profile-financial.com?
Let me tell you about today's guests. In the first half of the show, I'll be bringing on Rob Berger. He is a litigation attorney in Washington, D.C., and he's the founder of DoughRoller.net. Dough as in D-O-U-G-H, which we would often call bread, or simply money. It's a personal finance and investing blog, so he'll be talking to us about some of the ideas, some of which he also shares with people in Forbes and in Daily Finance and in U.S. News and World Report. That's in the first half of the show. And in the second half of the show, I'll be talking to Jan Lucat, who is Romanian, and he started a company called Paymo. It's a fascinating company. Not only that, it's a company that I've used, and I'd like to talk to him about what the product is as part of the Goldstein on Gelt high-tech hero, and Jan certainly is a high-tech hero. So hang on just a minute. We'll be bringing on the first guest, Rob Berger. Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have Rob Berger here on the Goldstein on Gelt show. He's not only a litigation attorney based in Washington, D.C., and the founder of DoughRoller.net, but he's a real expert in personal finance and investing. Rob, a real pleasure to have you.
Well, Doug, thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
So one of the things that you talk about is financial freedom. And frankly, that's a word that personally I use. I feel it's getting batted around a little bit, maybe too much in the radio and podcast and personal financial world. So let's go to some of the basics. How do you define financial freedom?
Yeah, I kind of look at financial freedom as a bit of a continuum. I think ultimately, sort of the ultimate financial freedom is your ability to live off your investments, you know, without having to work. But I think for a lot of people, yeah, that's so far away, you know, that it doesn't have much meaning. And so, you know, there is sort of a continuum. I mean, people just starting out, maybe even in debt, but you know, once you get to the point where you're just not living month to month, you have an extra degree of financial freedom. And once you get, you know, your credit card debt paid off and your school loans paid off, you kind of get even that much closer, and it gives you more flexibility and more options with your money. So I kind of see it as in stages. But ultimately, it is, you know, your ability to live off your investments, which is both a function of how much money you have in the bank, how it's invested, but also how much you spend. So there are folks that I know that are financially free, and they don't make, they're very much sort of in the average in terms of income, but they've managed their money and their expenses in a way that they can now, at a relatively young age, do whatever they want in their lives.
I guess that's sort of an area that I work in a lot, because I work with mostly people who left the United States for any of a number of reasons. Frankly, most of them are in Israel and they left for ideological reasons. But there are a lot of people who leave simply because the cost of living is cheaper in another country and they're able to achieve financial freedom much more easily. Have you found that also?
Yeah, it's certainly true, depending on where you move. But, you know, there are plenty of places in the U.S., though, where you can still live on a fairly modest amount of money. I don't happen to live in one of those places, but I grew up in one of those places. I grew up in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Father was from Cleveland, and grew up in Columbus. And it's, you know, it's a different world than Washington, D.C. So there's certainly plenty of places in the United States where you can live on a modest income, and you can buy a home without, you know, spending a small fortune. Although, sure, you could. There are folks that I know that have moved overseas and other places where perhaps the cost of living is even less. I don't know what it's like in Israel.
It's pretty expensive here.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed.
It's the people who move to the Far East or South America who do find it cheaper. You know, one of the issues I think that a lot of people have is the never enough syndrome, which is A guy might say, you know, if only I had $1 million, I'd be okay. And then, you know, he gets that $1 million. And he goes, well, you know, maybe not. Maybe if I had $2 million. In fact, I remember when I was little, my father used to say, when the Dow Jones hits 3,000, he's going to retire. You know, here we are 13,000, 14,000 points higher. And, well, he eventually did retire. But, you know, people, they seem to have a goal, but they really can't stick to it because they're afraid of this financial freedom. Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. I have to confess, Doug, that it kind of describes me because I envisioned slowly getting out of the practice of law 5 years ago. And I had all these plans, and it wasn't based on the Dow, but it was based on, you know, my investments, and I'll go part time, and then I'll, you know, slowly work my way down to retired. And I'm in far better, you know, financial shape today, let's say, than I was 5 or 6, 7 years ago. And I still practice law. So it is a scary thing, particularly when you're younger. I'm 48. When you're younger, the thought of sort of, you know, giving up your career, whatever it might be, and relying on, you know, mutual funds or whatever your investments are, is a scary thing. I mean, I don't even think it's so much about wanting a lot of stuff, although that can be a problem. But most people that want a lot of stuff don't end up in the position where they can retire early to begin with, right? But it is a scary thing. You know, you feel like you don't have – I think there's an illusion of control when you're working for your money that you don't have when it's the stock market, because the stock market seems so out of control.
Right. Well, it's funny you call it the illusion. We're talking to Rob Berger, who is an attorney in Washington, D.C. He's also a real expert on personal finance. He has a blog and a great podcast. He's been talking to us about the concept of financial freedom and maybe why, even if he could be financially free, he hasn't quite taken the step yet. But, Rob, I know you've got a financial freedom calculator. How does that work?
Yeah. So, basically, it takes the percentage of your income that you save. You know, if you're saving 5%, then, of course, that means you're spending 95%. And it uses those percentages and makes different assumptions about returns, and you can change these assumptions. I mean, it just calculates based on an assumed return how long it will take you saving whatever percent of your income you're saving, 5, 10, some people say 50%, whatever the number is, how long it will take you to be completely financially free. And I define financial freedom as having 25 times your annual expenses. And that's just a sort of a rule of thumb based on what's known as the 4% withdrawal rate. You know, it's the assumption you can withdraw 4% of your investments in retirement and then adjust it each year for inflation and have a reasonable chance of not outliving your money. You could adjust the numbers. You could assume 3.5% or something. But that's what the calculator assumes. And you just, you know, figure out where you are, what percentage of your income you're saving, what you think you'll get in your investment returns, and it'll tell you how many years, for better or worse, you have to go before you achieve financial freedom.
I'm glad you brought up the 4% rule, because this is something that is spoken about in the media, and some people, I think, actually rely on it too much. But when you said it, you actually touched on something interesting, which is, you said, the 4% rule adjusted for inflation. What do you mean by that?
Well, the 4% rule says, you know, in year one of retirement, you'll withdraw – you can withdraw 4% of your nest egg, whatever that is. And then in the second year, you throw the 4% number out. You just take what you withdrew the previous year and increase it by the inflation rate wherever you live. And then each year you just continue to adjust it by inflation. At least that's the theory behind the 4% rule.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this actually works as a tool that people should use in planning their retirement?
I do, actually. I think it's a perfectly fine tool for planning purposes. I also think it's fine if people, you know, maybe you want to take a slightly more conservative approach and assume, you know, a 3.5%. I mean, as the percentage you assume goes down, the amount of money you need in the bank to achieve the same dollar number goes up, right? But I think for planning purposes, 4% is reasonable. You know, there's a lot of articles out there that say, you know, maybe it should be a little less. I think when you get to retirement, though, I'm not so sure it's actually a great rule to live by. But I think from a planning perspective, I think it's a perfectly fine approach to planning your retirement.
So in today's market, when interest rates are so low,
if someone retires and says, if I want my money safe, I'm going to put it into the bank and get all of about 0%. So if I take 4% a year, I'm literally going to be eating into principal and adjust that by inflation every year, and I'm going to be drilling a huge hole in my future safety. What can someone who is retired now do, given the fact that interest rates are just so low?
Well, now this is going to get into my perspective on investing. I think a savings account is not a very safe investment. I know it feels safe because, at least here in the U.S., it's FDIC insured, so it feels safe. Your balance isn't going to go down, but on an inflation-adjusted basis, you're guaranteed to lose money.
Right.
So even when you're retired, let's say you retire at 65, depending on, you know, taking average lifespans, you know, you've got 15, 20, 25 years of investing left. So you still are a long-term investor. And in my mind, you need to still be tilted towards equities. It might be 60-40 or 50-50. You know, I don't think there's a single right answer. And the rest are going to probably be in bonds, not in in the bank, at least for the most part. You'll have some in the bank. The 4% rule assumes that you're still invested. If you're going to take everything and put it in a bank account, then yeah, 4% is going to give you a lot of trouble. You're just not going to be able to make it that way, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's true. Even if, you know, we look at the interest rates, we see how low they are, but it's interest rates compared to inflation. So even if interest rates were 5%, but if inflation were higher, you could still run into the exact same problem.
So drill into that a little bit more, because I think actually we may be entering a time when inflation is picking up and people are retiring. So how would someone calculate that?
Well, I mean, it's looking at nominal returns versus the real rate of return. So it's after inflation returns. So let's say you get 5% on a savings account, but inflation, I'll just make a number up, is 4%. Well, you know, you've beat out inflation. That's good. But your after inflation return is 1%. And, you know, that percentage, you know, it seems year to year, it seems small, seems kind of insignificant. But if I can just do a quick detour, I was going through a bunch of my paperwork this weekend, and I found a receipt from my stepmother, whose father bought her a 1965 Mustang for graduation in 1965. Brand new, blue, hardtop, coupe. I mean, wouldn't you love to have that car right now?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know how much it cost in 1965, brand new, two-door Mustang?
$2,200.
$2,200.
Well, I guessed it. Wow, there you go.
You guessed it. So, I mean, you know, when you look at inflation, inflation is the kind of thing you got to look at over the long term to really see its impact and feel it. But, you know, over 20 years of retirement, you know, it's going to make a big dent into the spending power of your money. So you got to have investments that are going to do better than inflation. And
right.
A savings account, you know, sometimes it can. It depends on the market. But usually it's not the best way to invest your money.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I actually think a lot of times people talk to me in my day job as a financial advisor, and they reminisce about getting 10-15% on their bank deposits. And then I just have to remind them that was at a period of time when inflation rate was the same thing.
Right.
So you weren't actually coming out ahead by doing that.
Right.
Rob, we've actually covered quite a bit, but unfortunately, we're just about out of time. So tell us in the last few seconds, how can people follow you and follow the work that you're doing?
Well, the best way is just to go to dohroller.net. You can check out the blog. You'll see a link for the podcast. And I have a free newsletter that I send out every Saturday. And you'll see a link for that. So the dohroller.net would be the best way. I write for Forbes and other publications, so you can find me there too. But you'll see links to that on dohroller.net as well.
Okay, and we will put a link to that at the show notes of today's show at goldsteinongelt.com. Rob Berger, thanks so much for your time.
Appreciate it, Doug. Thank you.
Beginning of the show, I told you how Susan Polgar, my co-author of Rich as a King, had played a simultaneous game. This is what she does when she does exhibition games. In fact, she broke the Guinness Book of World Record in 2005. She played almost 400 games of chess simultaneously. So when we travel around, sometimes she'll play 5 or 10 or 15 people all at once. She's playing in the Ira Sohn Conference. This is a major financial conference in New York, and playing against 10 people. Why do people do this, apart from the fact that it's totally amazing to watch someone who is able to keep in her mind 10 different games and, of course, win all of them? Why do we do this as part of a discussion of becoming rich as a king? The answer is that in dealing with money, there are always many, many moving parts, and each one in and of itself has lots of subparts. People often get overwhelmed when they say, Doug, how can I follow my investments, and at the same time I've got to follow my bank statements, and I've got to maintain my checkbook, and each of these has subcategories. It's like playing 10 games of chess simultaneously. So one of the things that we can learn when we see how Susan does it, hopefully, is going to be able to help us to handle it on our own. And the main thing that she does is when she approaches a board, and she walks around the room, she pays one board and then the next, she makes a move on each one, is she assesses the situation. She looks at the whole board. Now, that's very difficult, even though the boards are very small. They're only maybe 12 inches by 12 inches, but it's hard for amateur chess players to look at the whole board. So we've broken it down, and we talk to people about ROI, that the first thing you have to look at is the risk in front of you. The second thing you have to look at is what opportunities there are. And the third thing, after you've exhausted dealing with the risks and exhausted any possible opportunities, then the I, ROI, and the I stands for invest. That's when you have to begin to make incremental improvements in your situation, not look for something, not swing for the bleachers. And that's how she wins. Ultimately, she ends up crushing her opponents because she makes sure she has no risks. Then she'll take an opportunity, and oftentimes there is one. And finally, she'll just begin to slowly move her pieces forward until you, as the opponent, feel there's nothing left for you to do. All right, stay tuned. In part two of the show, I'll be bringing on Jan Lukat, who is the founder of a fantastic company, which I myself have used their product. He is a high-tech hero, and we love having high-tech heroes right here on the Goldstein on Geld show.
You're listening to International Investment Advisor Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Geld show. Stay tuned for part two of the show. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, pension, or specific investment advice. If you need such advice, contact a licensed advisor. Before making any investment decisions, please review the complete disclaimer at www.goldsteinongelt.com.